I can't wait to get back out there and just give everything I can.
A young Soldotna woman advances to the finals in the U.S. Olympic trials. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, July 8th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Senator Murkowski speaks out against a GMO labeling bill.
The reality is we will not see the labeling that I, as an Alaskan, that I would require, that I would want.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Arctic is wild, remote, and untouched. See how contemporary artists challenge the mythical ideal of the North in the Anchorage Museum exhibition, View from Up Here, the Arctic at the Center of the World, on view through October the 2nd. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Museum. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Federal prosecutors say a 36-year-old Fort Wainwright soldier has pleaded guilty to receiving bribes in a plot to steal fuel at a base in Afghanistan. Sergeant Sheldon Morgan entered the guilty plea in Fairbanks today to a count of conspiring to receive bribes. Prosecutors say Morgan was an Army specialist when he arranged for an Afghan trucking company translator to steal 5,000 gallons of fuel on two occasions in December 2010. According to prosecutors, the translator promised Morgan $5,000 for each truckload. Prosecutors say the money was wired to an account outside the United States that was opened by Morgan's wife. Prosecutors say it's the eighth guilty plea for similar plots at Fenty between June 2009 and April 2012. Morgan's sentencing is scheduled for October. The U.S. Senate last night passed a bill that is said to require consumer labeling of genetically modified food, but opponents say it is too weak to be called a requirement. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski says the legislation would not obligate the makers of genetically engineered salmon to clearly distinguish their product from a natural salmon.
The reality is we will not see the labeling that I, as an Alaskan, who is putting fish on the dinner table for my family, that I would require, that I would want.
The bill would allow GMO food manufacturers to satisfy the mandate by placing a QR code on their labels. To get information, a consumer would scan the code with a smartphone, which would lead to a web page. The legislation was sponsored by farm state lawmakers. If it becomes law, it would preempt states from enforcing their own GMO labeling mandates and block an Alaska law requiring labels for engineered salmon. The measure passed by a vote of 63-30, with both Alaska senators voting no. It now goes to the House. Soldotna's Ali Ostrander has advanced to the finals in the U.S. Olympic trials this week. As KBBI's Jenny Nyman reports, if Ostrander places in the top three on Sunday, she'll be off to Rio this summer.
In less time than it takes to grill a steak, Soldotna's Ali Ostrander crossed the finish line in the women's 5,000-meter semifinals at the U.S. Olympic Trials on Thursday in Eugene, Oregon. Her 15-minute, 27.13-second time secures her a slot in the finals and a shot at the 2016 Summer Olympics in Brazil.
I did as well as I was hoping to do. The prelim was just about making it onto finals, and so I was able to do that without having to be really stressed and, you know, waiting for, like, time qualification and anything like that.
Ostrander is only 19. Having just finished her freshman year at Boise State University in Idaho, she was the only collegian among the 23 women in the 5K, and this was her first race in 4 months, coming back from an overuse knee injury in March.
I didn't know exactly what to expect going in due to the time I had to take off for injury. So I was just happy to get back out on the track and feel good and be able to qualify to finals.
Ostrander's parents, Paul and Terry, are in Eugene to watch Allie run. Paul says he thought Allie looked great.
The main thing we were hoping was that she was just going to run well. She was questioning where her fitness was, and of course, we didn't know where it was. And she just wanted to know and show to herself that she could still run fast, and she did, of course, so ran better than I had hoped.
Those familiar with Ostrander in Alaska shouldn't be surprised by her speed. In high school, she won 3 cross-country titles, set records in 1600 and 3200 meters, and even won a national cross-country race while still a senior. She also notched 6 straight junior girls' wins on Mount Marathon, setting a new record and beating all the boys in her final juniors race. In the women's division last year, she finished 2nd and still broke the 25-year course record. Ostrander chose to skip the mountain race in Seward this 4th of July in favor of the trials in Oregon.
It was a little sad watching the live stream and not being there on the mountain because I do love the race, but after my race yesterday, I'm sure that I made the right decision.
Ostrander says whatever happens Sunday, she's thankful to just be in Oregon able to run.
I'm just really excited. It's basically a bonus run. I can't wait to get back out there and just give everything I can.
A top 3 finish will advance Ostrander to the Olympics. The final is at 5:28 p.m. Mountain Time on Sunday. I'm Jenny Nyman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, what archaeology means to the youth of Non-Dalton.
We give them computers and we teach them about the history of the United States, but we've taught them so little about who they are and where they come from.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Support for Alaska Public Media's Energy News Desk comes from Bettisworth North, Architects and Planners, and the Atwood Foundation.
Late last month, a woman who had been brutally murdered was found in the vehicle of 34-year-old Benjamin Wilkins of Anchorage. The deceased, 30-year-old Jacqueline Goodwin, was laid to rest beside her mother in Kotzebue. Police are still investigating the relationship between Wilkins and Goodwin, but court records show in the past she was charged with prostitution. Under current law, if a sex worker witnesses or is the victim of a crime, the person cannot report the crime without fear of being charged with prostitution or sex trafficking. But SB 91, the omnibus crime bill that passed this session, would change that. Tara Burns, an advocate and former sex worker, explains.
They can come forward and they're not going to be charged with prostitution for coming forward. And they're not going to be investigated based on any information that was gained as a result of them making the report.
Burns says the changes make it safer for both sex workers and the entire community because sex workers will be able to help police identify violent criminals. They will also be able to report sexual abuse of minors and the distribution of child pornography without fear of reprisal.
When you can catch those people right away, you can prevent so much other violence.
SB 91 has not been signed by Governor Bill Walker yet. He has until July 13th to sign the bill, let it become law without his signature, or veto it in its entirety. His staff say they are still reviewing the 125-page piece of legislation and are looking into concerns over sections 39 and 40, which are related to sex trafficking. Byrne says she hopes that when the bill is signed, people will provide more information about Wilkins and his past. He's currently been indicted on charges of murder in the first degree, kidnapping, sexual assault, and other charges. The last decade saw a remarkable run-up in oil and gas employment as high oil prices led to record numbers of energy industry jobs in Alaska. That meant young people had an easier time getting started in oil and gas. Hannah Vupula was lucky enough to land an engineering job last year at an Anchorage firm that works on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. She had just graduated from college in Texas. But now that Alaska is in recession, Vupula doesn't know what the future holds. This week, Alaska's Energy Desk is spotlighting those who have been affected by the recession as part of the series An Uncertain Future. Hannah is originally from India. She says her parents didn't know what to think when she told them she was moving to Anchorage.
All my parents knew about Alaska was that they were bears and that it got really cold, so cold that people's eyeballs froze. They had heard it or watched an episode somewhere and they had that opinion. And my dad was so nervous for me. He visited me the first Fourth of July weekend, and he visited me. But when he first saw a Starbucks, he said, oh, you'd be okay here. There's a Starbucks here. I'm not even a coffee drinker. There's not just all wilderness. So that gave him a lot of comfort. I remember when we first moved up here, our colleagues would talk about like a big PFD and how great it is, you know, and how it's a really big benefit of living in Alaska, and how like slope workers make so much money, and like this is like a land of milk and honey. Like, you come here, you work hard. This is where you have to be when you're young, you know. You earn, you go back, and then you live whatever life you want. So it's a very, very like bright, exciting future that they were talking about at that time. But personally, I haven't experienced that yet. I don't know any different. So it's difficult when you don't know what's going to happen to your job. All these big companies are having major layoffs. We're a small company. We really need work to make our company work. And the fact that our company has decided to not lay off everyone and like just reduce us to 32-hour weeks is a fabulous idea. I think I'd rather have my employer do that than just me not have a job at all.
Hannah Vupula is an automation engineer with the Anchorage firm Dowland Bach. Her story came to us from Alaska's Energy Desk, a new collaboration between Alaska Public Media, KTOO, and KUCB. You can find more stories from the series, An Uncertain Future, online or on Facebook. Alaska tribes can now proceed in asking the federal government to take their lands into trust, essentially taking lands out of state jurisdiction, like Indian Country is in the lower 48. The change comes after a federal appeals court last week dismissed Alaska's challenge that had stopped land trust applications. Four Alaska tribes that sued the Interior Department can move forward with their applications. That includes Akyechuk and Tuluksak. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
Philip Peters Sr. is the Akyechuk Native Community Council chairman. He says trust status would fulfill generations of desire for greater tribal sovereignty.
Our elders in the past want the land base in order to control our jurisdiction. Land is really important because all those years we don't have any recognition from the state of Alaska. We need a jurisdiction in order to control our village.
Peter hopes trust status will offer that control through improved public safety and policing. He says defined land jurisdiction and federal funding that comes with trust status will make those changes possible. The Interior Department will publish a list of tribes that have filed for trust status later this year. Tribes contacted by KYUK would not say if they are among those tribes, but Peter says the Akyechuk Tribes and Akyechuk Native Corporation are meeting after the height of the summer subsistence season to inventory their lands for trust status.
Restricted lands, unrestricted lands, and corporation lands in our town site.
Peter would not comment on the trust legal case. The Tuluksak Native community would not comment on any land trust issues. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Alaska's delegation to Congress writes bills every year to transfer or sell federal land to local governments and Native corporations. In late May, Senator Lisa Murkowski sponsored one public land divestment bill for Alaska that's particularly far-reaching. APRN's Liz Ruskin took a look and found it's even more expansive than the senator intended.
Congress in 1971 promised Cook Inlet Region Incorporated more than 1 million acres of land. SERI Senior Vice President for Land, Ethan Schutt, says the corporation is still trying to get its final 43,000 acres, but all of the good income-producing land in the region is spoken for.
So we're kind of fighting and scratching and clawing to try to find something that is reasonable and has economic potential to fulfill the 45-year-old promise made to our shareholders.
Schutt says SERI has its eye on some federal acreage outside the region, but it needs a new law to make the government hand it over. To help SERI, Senator Lisa Murkowski filed the ANCSA Improvement Act in May. The bill does a lot of things, but one section would open up vast amounts of land all over the state for SERI to choose from. SERI would be allowed to select land from National Wildlife Refuges and the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. National parks, monuments, and the Arctic Refuge would be off limits. Asked if there are other limitations in her bill, Murkowski thought there were.
In that, you're saying that SERI can select lands within NPRA, within any refuge except ANWR, without regard to any kind of conservation measures that are in place? For example,
they can
select wilderness or no?
No, they can't. They can't.
Wilderness, as a federal designation, is land that receives the highest level of protection. After further questions to her staff, a Murkowski spokesman later said nothing in the bill now would prevent SERI from selecting wilderness, but he said the senator intends to add such limits later. The SERI legislation is just one part of a 12-part bill that would open up federal land for Native corporations to select and, in some cases, require the government to convey certain selections within refuges. One paragraph likely to attract attention would require the Interior Secretary to give a small piece of the Arctic Refuge near Kaktovik to the Native corporation for that village. Andy Motoro of the Alaska Wilderness League says the bill is a concern for conservation groups.
Because of how broad the legislation is, it seems that many areas that have earned protections over the years would be up for grabs.
Are we trying to engender additional controversy? Absolutely not.
Shutt, the SERI vice president, doesn't want to say yet what land they hope to obtain, but he says they are aiming for selections near other Native corporation land.
And we're trying to look at areas that are potentially within National Wildlife Refuges or NPRA, but not brand new holdings deep within the heart of some conservation unit.
This isn't the first time SERI has tried to expand its land pool beyond the low-value lands it says it was left with, which corporate lore describes as mountaintops and glaciers. In 1976, it won the right to select up to half its acreage from elsewhere in the state. Shutt, though, says that legislation has conditions that make it impractical for getting the final 43,000 acres. The 1976 law, for instance, says the Secretary of the Interior must agree to give up the land SERI wants. Murkowski's new bill says the Secretary can't stand in SERI's way. Murkowski's committee, Senate Energy and Natural Resources, hasn't had a hearing on the bill yet. Environmental groups are on the lookout for pieces of it that might be added as riders to other bills. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, unearthing a village. On the north shore of Lake Clark, there's a place called Kijik. It's the historic homeland of the Dena'ina Athabascans of the area, many of whom actually pronounce it Dena'ina. Kijik is also the site of a culture camp where youth and elders from the village of Non-Dalton came together last month. Dozens of abandoned house sites dot the area, and KDLG's Hannah Colton joined some kids as they got their hands dirty learning about one of them.
A little push down, flick out. A little push down, flick out. And you kind of want to keep going down the wall.
Randy Tidor kneels in front of a 50-centimeter square of dirt.
The bushy-bearded archaeologist wields a little metal trowel. He's showing a group of kids how to carefully pull layers of soil loose from the quadrant.
Excavation is an art.
11-year-old Cordell Beluda Trifon puts down a metal detector he's been playing with and gets to work in the dirt.
With a dustpan and a trowel.
After a little bit, Cordell puts down his trowel and he hands something to Tidor.
Wow, good eye, man.
It's a tiny red speck.
Cordell grabbed it and he said, oh, it's a bead. I was like, what? He put it in my hand. I was like, oh, it's a bead.
This little bead, Tidor explains, is a huge clue. This type of glass bead was only made in Europe after a certain date. So it helps archaeologists like Tidor figure out how old this site is. They think this house was lived in between 1840 and the 1880s. As he explores more into the site, Cordell tells me he's getting a picture in his head, visualizing what it might have looked like when people lived here.
Like, there's a fire pit, and, like, over there's, like, a storage room, bedroom. Well, that's the front door over there, bedroom. I'm still kind of putting the picture together.
This curiosity is exactly what Tidor is trying to inspire. He wants Cordell and the others to wonder how people were living back then. Maybe to realize that the people living on this land were in many ways just like us. But like many old village sites in Alaska, this land and its people have a troubled history. Fur hunters and explorers from Russia started plundering Lake Clark's Denaina villages in the late 1790s. Next came the Russian Orthodox missionaries, who by the 1830s were traveling around regularly to baptize and hold services in villages. And, of course, with this new contact came new diseases. Around 1900, a measles and flu epidemic devastated the population at Kijik. The survivors moved down the lake to what is now the village of Nundalton, seeking better access to salmon runs and trading posts. They left Kijik behind, along with a lakeshore full of graves and sad memories.
There's estimating up to 200 graves here.
Karen Ivanov is Denaina Athabaskan and a cultural anthropologist with Lake Clark National Park. For 5 years, she's been working with the Nundalton Tribal Council and researchers to identify and mark those graves. The work culminated in a blessing ceremony last summer.
Close to 100 people were here, and we combined the traditional way of spirituality and blessing with the Russian Orthodox way. So this is a healing place.
There's still controversy over the land at Kijik. Parts of it are now owned by a homesteader and a native allotment, with structures they built disturbing the old church and grave sites. Ivanov says the Kijik Corporation has bought a few acres back, and they hope to regain more of the land that the people consider sacred.
You know, that's part of the vision, is to clear this place of the cabins and have some plaques here to identify who's buried.
Bringing a bunch of kids here for culture camp is also a part of that healing process, says Ivanov. She planned the camp along with Michelle Ravenmoon of Pope Vanoy on Lake Iliamna.
Of course, we want the kids to have a lot of fun and enjoy themselves and grow their self-confidence and their pride. But we also wanted to make sure that they learn their history and their identity, where they come from, who they are.
Each activity, from wood carving to caribou hide tanning to the language classes, is meant to help kids understand their Denaina culture.
We've been very unsuccessful as Native people, sending them out, preparing them for this outside world that's there. We give them computers and we teach them about the history of the United States, but we've taught them so little about who they are and where they come from. I think it's important for the kids to know their history.
A piece of that history lies in the ground at the archaeological site, waiting for kids to get their hands on it. Up until recently, the archaeological site was known to scientists by a string of numbers and letters, XLC-98. But Michelle and Karen were excited to tell me it's now officially being renamed to Kuk Taz-Un. It's the same name as the culture camp, and it means the sun is rising, hopefully on a brighter future for the Denaina Athabaskans of Lake Clark. For AK, I'm Hannah Colton.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week, we're hearing from Karen Paul in Quingilangoc, Paul is a dual language teacher who teaches English and Yupik.
I went to college and started working here, and she was my colleague, the same teacher who taught me when I was a second or third grader, and it felt so great. She inspired me. I enjoyed school so much. I come every day, look, and I loved that. And when I taught them, knowing they learned something, that made me happy. When we first started dual language, some parents were not sure about it because they heard that half and half, Yupik is being taught half a day, the other half is in English, and some parents thought their child would lose the Yupik language. Even though there's hardships and ups and downs, I try my best, I do my best. I love my job. I want to inspire the kids. Teaching is not something, it's not a simple job. I guess there's not a word to describe it. We try to remember to talk to the students in Yupik. And the principal, she tries, but she does her best.
Karen Paul lives in Quiguilangoc. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Hannah Colton and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Jenny Nyman in Kenai, Ann Hillman in Anchorage, and Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
GCI, serving more than 100 Alaska communities. GCI's Alaska Born and Raised campaign celebrates the people who call Alaska home. GCI.com/share your story. Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka encourages rural Alaska high school students to apply to be part of their 70-year legacy. With a rich curriculum from art to advanced engineering, over 10,000 alumni strong, 90% of their students go on to a 4-year college or other post-secondary education. Explore your talents and develop your dreams at Mount Edgecombe High School. Apply online at mehs.us. This message sponsored by Mount Edgecombe High School. Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.